Chapter 9. Xingxing squatted by the pool with her right arm tight around her calves and her left hand dangling in the water, her forehead pressed on her knees.
Mother, mother, what can I do? Where can I go?
The beautiful fish sucked on the tip of her thumb. She turned her head and rested her cheek instead on her knees so that she could look at the fish while she talked to the spirit of her mother.
I didn't mean to bring a demon into the house. I thought I was simply having pity on an unfortunate creature.
The fish now moved to the tip of Xingxing's index finger.
But I should have guessed, of course. The wretched spirit of that raccoon was responsible for his misfortune. How could I have trusted him?
The fish sucked on the tip of Xingxing's middle finger.
And I didn't trust him, not really.
After all, I brought the beautiful fish with me out to the jujub trees so he wouldn't eat her. The fish sucked on the tip of Xingxing's next finger. Then it moved on to suck at the tip of her pinky. The fish's white scales were without blemish, pure white brightness, like the positive energies of the universe. Father had taught Xingxing that there were two kinds of energies, the negative yin and the positive yang. All things needed both, the stillness, darkness, and cold of yin, as well as the movement, brightness, and heat of yang. Without one, the other could not be, for what is brightness without dark? Harmony resulted from a balance of the two. Xingxing had always felt more affinity to the yang within her than the yin, even though she was a girl, because her own name evoked a sense of brightness. Now she thought about how the animal that most embodied yin was the tiger, and the animal that most embodied yang was the dragon. And this beautiful white fish wanted to become a dragon, so she too was more drawn to yang than yin. Xingxing and the fish shared a bond.
I'm glad he didn't eat you, said Xingxing,
moving her face closer to the fish. She sniffled.
But I'm so sad for poor Wei Ping.
A crow cawed, unluckiest of birds, then another, then the whole flock, out of sight beyond the trees, as though announcing the ill fortune of Xingxing's family. Xingxing looked down at her own naturally small feet. She had always taken pride in them, a pride she kept secret, of course. But now she would have given anything if she could have traded her small, strong feet for Wei Ping's big feet before the girl had had them bound. At least with small feet to start with, Wei Ping's ordeal would have been reduced, and maybe her feet wouldn't have given off the stink that drew the demon raccoon to them.
Poor, poor Wei Ping. And oh, poor, poor Xingxing, cast out from her family. Where will I go now? What will I do? She sobbed.
Xingxing rested her cheek on her knees again. A girl alone in the world had few choices. Everyone said Xingxing was pretty. She realized in this moment that she secretly harbored the hope that someday stepmother would decide to find her a husband too. Now, that would never happen, and her prettiness could well condemn her to a life without virtue. She closed her eyes and let the tears slip out sideways, rolling across the bridge of her nose, across her temple, into her hair. In her sadness, she imagined many things. Her head became the carp bowl that sat on the ground beside her feet. She was a frog trapped in the bowl, scrabbling at the slick sides. And now the bowl cracked, and a white wave of water washed her out and away. And it was not the pool she was in, but their great wide river, which in a flash turned wild and swift and carried her into the upper regions of the Han River and then down, down, down southward into the giant Yagazi River with its incessant winds and out to sea where no frog could survive. Her skin dried in the salt, her eyes split, her fingers curled till they disappeared. She heard screaming. Xingxing opened her eyes. Was it her own scream she'd heard? The afternoon sun was already moving toward evening. Get up, lazy one. Stepmother leaned on a cane. Her cheeks were drawn, but the blood that had covered her face and arms had been washed away, and she wore fresh clothing. And most important of all,
There was no knife in her hand. Nothing to carry out the threat she made in the cave. She didn't even hold a willow switch for beatings. Xingxing got to her feet with difficulty. She'd been squatting so long, her legs had cramped into position.
"Go get Master Tang, slave boy. The two of you can carry Wei Ping together. We are going to Master Wu's grave."
Had stepmother truly forgiven her and accepted her back into the family?
And going to father's grave, that was wonderful.
Indeed, nothing could be better at this moment than honoring the spirit of father. Xingxing stood stupid, afraid to believe her good fortune.
"Has talking to that evil fish turned you into an idiot?"
Stepmother stomped the cane in the dirt. "Hurry, lazy one." Xingxing ran, with spikes shooting up her legs from her still sleeping feet.
"Stop!"
shouted stepmother. Alas, this fortune had been too good to be true. Xingxing turned in dismay to stepmother.
"Come back and take this bowl."
She pointed to the carp bowl on the bank of the pool.
"Sell it to Master Tang. No, sell it to his wife instead. She has a softer heart. She'll lose it in the clutter of her house, and I'll never have to see it again. Get a good price."
The beautiful fish was too large for that bowl now anyway. The fish would be much happier free in the spring-fed pool. Xingxing came back, bowed once before stepmother, then picked up the bowl.
"Walk," said stepmother. "You mustn't break the bowl, but walk as fast as you can. And,"
she pointed her cane at Xingxing,
"never say a word to anyone about what happened today. Once Wei Ping is married, we'll find a way to explain to her husband, a way that doesn't mention devils."
Chapter 10. Master Tang's wife, Mei Zai, ran her gnarled finger over the character in the center of the bowl. "Was this your clever idea?"
Xingxing didn't speak, for to answer would be immodest. Her cheeks went hot. Besides, she didn't want to start a conversation. She had to hurry, for Wei Ping's sake.
"I recognize your calligraphy, of course." Mei Zai looked thoughtfully at the bowl. "It is indeed a marvelous bowl." She set it down on the fine bamboo table. "But I have little use for it myself."
Xingxing pressed her lips together and looked down.
"It would make the perfect gift for my daughter-in-law, however," said Mei Zai after a pause. Xingxing looked up with gratitude into the smiling eyes of Mei Zai. "Let's see how much I can afford for it." Mei Zai went through an inner door, leaving Xingxing alone in the central room. The abundance of superb things, rosewood furniture and elaborately carved jade statuettes and lacquered ware in reds and blacks and an engraved walrus tusk, made her stand very straight and tall, her arms pinned to her sides. She knew that breathing alone never broke things, but still, she breathed shallowly. She would move as little as possible, except for her eyes. In the cave, they had good quality furniture, too, though stepmother had sold anything not absolutely necessary. But even when father was alive, their belongings had been in nowhere near the abundance found in Master Tang's house. Father liked simplicity, a taste Xingxing had inherited. And Master Tang was wealthy, something the Wu family was not. Her eyes moved past the showy items and slowly took in the line of blue and white porcelain bottles on the shelf beyond the table. They were decorated with lines that made pleasing patterns on the rounded sides and at the neck. The fronts were flat, however, and though she couldn't see the backs, she guessed they were as well. On the fronts were ovals with words written from top to bottom. She read asparagus, for the treatment of painful illnesses in the joints and lower back. The next jar said sesame, and the next, poppies. Some of the bottles merely said what the cure was, without the ingredient: eye remedy, intestinal calming lotion, elixir of 8 precious ingredients for rescue from danger. One bottle had no words, but an erotic scene instead, and Xingxing knew it was one of the aphrodisiacs that she overheard women gossip about as they stood in little gaggles around the cart of the occasional visiting doctor.
stepmother had never talked about them. But father had told her that erotic scenes were nothing to be shamed by. Rather, they were talismans for good luck. And this was a moment when Xingxing's family needed all the luck they could get. She stared for several minutes. On the shelf against the adjoining wall were more bottles, their flat fronts in the shape of octagons, sitting on stands with little necks that held paper and cork stoppers. These had the yin-yang symbol in the center, with a series of three lines going out to the sides at intervals, like spokes. There were so many bottles, and they were lined up so precisely straight, that Xingxing had the same sensation she felt when looking at the endless horizon of the sea in so many of Master Tang's paintings. That sensation of being as tiny as a dust mote. All the bottles on both shelves had a funny little character at the top that Xingxing had never seen before. "We bought them when a state pharmacy in the big city closed," said Mei Zai. She had come back without Xingxing noticing. The girl had been so absorbed in studying the bottles. "Do you have anything for pain in the feet?" asked Xingxing. Mei Zai laughed. "Oh, they're not full. We know nothing about the practice of medicine, dear girl. Master Tang and I enjoy them just as objects of beauty. Here, come take a look at these." She led Xingxing to a small table in a corner that held a low, wide bowl. Xingxing immediately recognized the bowl as one her father had made. In it was a pile of something she was familiar with, pottery shards. Their jagged edges brought back the image of Wei Ping's bone ends. She had to hurry. Mei Zai held up a shard with a frog pattern on it. "This is old. I don't know how old, but hundreds and hundreds of years. Perhaps even thousands. It was found way down south in the Dongting Lake area of the Yangtze River. The artistry is crude, but it may have been sacred to the people who used it." The frog had a round back with two stripes down the center and dots on either side in perfect reflection. Despite the urgency of the moment, Xingxing couldn't help but feel delight. She imagined the frog hopping at the muddy edge of the river. "It's lovely," she said. Mei Zai opened her hand. It was full of small coins of cast copper. She looked Xingxing over, then reached into the folds of her bodice and took out a cloth purse. "Help me open this, please, for my fingers cannot work the clasp anymore." Xingxing opened the purse, and Mei Zai poured the coins into it. Xingxing was embarrassed that in her stepmother's and her haste, she'd forgotten to bring a purse. "I will return the purse quickly," she said. "I have others. You can keep it. And you'll need something to fill it after you've given your stepmother this money." Mei Zai's eyes discreetly went toward the bowl of pottery pieces, then back to Xingxing's face. "Pick the one that pleases you best." Xingxing shook her head. "I couldn't. Something so old and so fine. Never."
"But that's exactly why you should have one," said Mei Zai, and her face spoke plainly her sincerity. "Many people consider this junk, but you value it properly. Choose one."
Xingxing didn't dare put her hand in the bowl. She let her eyes do the searching, and there it was. A small part from a fluted mouth of what had clearly once been a large jar. It must have been a water jar, for this one piece held two animal images. A frog like the one on the shard Mei Zai had shown her, and a beautiful carp.